So, Scott, let me ask you a quick question.
Please.
How are you enjoying the regular podcast?
I love it.
The down low, as they say.
This is so much fun, Jim, and I think you alluded to it today in New Hampshire that this is something I've wanted to do for a long time, but I don't have anything to talk about other than my own tortured existence. So having the beauty and the excitement of DS-106, and there's no shortage of stuff to talk about. Every day, great things are happening, and plus through the virtue of my having taught the course a couple of times from Japan, I have enough of an overview of how things work that I can hopefully say things that are useful and helpful. But yeah, it's fun. But then again, there's the whole other side of it with anything I do. Listening back is excruciating, and it's not what I want yet, but you know, that's the process.
I really loved episode 9. I wanted to actually play it through all 7 minutes, and I love you and Andrew Thomas going back and forth between the time. I find that really enjoyable. But I love the back and forth between you and the students. It's amazing. But I really loved the not only introduction with the DS-106 radio stuff, but the playing out of those audio assignments and the thinking about them and getting students inspired to do them. I can't thank you enough for the work you're doing, and I'm finding the Scott Lowcast to really be awesome. The Lowcast is an unbelievable addition to this class, so thank you.
Well, thank you, Jim. Perhaps we might think about this idea of courses having kind of a Greek chorus, if you will, sort of narrating from the sides.
Yeah, so let's get the students' opinion. Kara, Charlie, you guys are in. You guys are the only ones who truly love DS-106. The other 15 don't love us, and they will pay. I will smite them, too. And I hope they get a recording of this because they need to know. But more seriously, what's been your take on, you know, not only the Lowcast, I won't put you on the spot, but just the experience of taking the course more generally, and how can we help you as a community kind of enjoy it to its fullest?
Well, I'd have to say it's one of those that even when you first take it, you know, even with the suggestion videos that I looked at before the course actually started and all that stuff, I still quite didn't have an idea of what I was getting myself into when I started. I mean, I think last week I was working 40 hours that week and taking Gen Chem every day. Yeah, so I fixed that. That's not happening anymore.
Good. I'm glad. Actually, I don't want you to go poor as a result of doing your summer session, but I do hope that you get something out of it, and getting something out of it means being in it. So yeah. I'm glad you stayed, and I'm also glad, because a lot of students realize they couldn't, and I respect that too. I mean, it's a lot of work, but I hope that it will pay off. So what's worked for you so far, and what hasn't?
What has worked is I've been, luckily for me, I have a tablet, so I was able to essentially like download the videos, some of the videos and all the Scott Lowe podcasts, and I was able to listen to those while I was sitting in my lovely guard shack at work doing nothing. And get some stuff done. So that way I could come back and reflect on it and then see if I can get work that way into my work when I come back the next day and do things, rather than having to just, you know, waste that entire 8 hours of me doing nothing. So that way I get some productivity, even though I'm getting paid to do something else.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. And what would you recommend? What would make it easier as being part of the class? Are you able to find other people's stuff? Do you feel like you're in the mix a bit? Do you feel isolated? How can we bring you in that regard?
I don't know. In the beginning, I felt kind of isolated. Still kind of do a little bit. I'm trying to branch out on Twitter to try and find more people here, there, and everywhere. I first went around the blogs, and I had a tough time. So Talkie Tina's list definitely helped out a lot of it in trying to find people.
Awesome. Yeah, Talkie Tina's amazing, although a little creepy. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Well, here's the other thing. You know, who said this? Sean Piacere, I want to say it's Piacciotti or Piacetti, said this, and he's a UMW student. He said, you know, I want some traffic on my site. I want people to come. And I totally understand that. The way I deal with that is I go and comment on people's sites. That brings them back. I also link back to their work. I mean, Scott Lowe has nailed this in his podcasts. He goes and is reading, obviously, but is bringing people's work into the work he does. And when you start doing that, when other people start bringing the work they're creating as part of a community, I really think that that changes the dynamic of the class.
It does. It has that feel of, because as I'm, even in this week, it seems like there's actually more, it's more of a community thing versus just students going through this, doing work, so on and so forth. It seems that as I'm getting more feedback from other students, it's actually kind of helpful.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, Charlie, this is a really good way to put your professor on the spot. If you ever want to compromise your professor's professionality, which I recommend, you should call me out on Twitter. Hey, look, you're not commenting on my stuff. Here's a post I want you to look at. And I think, who did that well? Arlana. Arlana did that really well. Like, when I wasn't commenting on her stuff, I wasn't there, she pointed me to it and said, I really want feedback. And I'm going to encourage everyone. You don't think you're getting feedback. You know, there's a lot going on. It can get a little. That's your right to demand it and to encourage it. And I think you'll be surprised how well it works. So I do read people's stuff. I am there. But don't be afraid ever to kind of say, look, I'm here. I'm waiting. And I want that next step. Go for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Jim. I don't know if you noticed in the text chat, but Kara has made a couple of comments, one directly related to feedback. And she's very much impressed with your efforts as the instructor, giving feedback and also saying what needs to be done, if I've read that correctly. And also, staying with Kara for just a second, she says the Scott Lowe cast are 180% awesome. She's never heard anything so good. So, Kara, thanks.
Well, Kara obviously is doped up on some heavy. She just got out of the hospital, and so she's not really taking in, though. She's right. I mean, your Scott Lowe casts have been awesome, and I think what I thought early on in your Scott Lowe cast, and we'll talk about them in some length, but the way in which you kind of parallel the experience of the student of not knowing what the hell is going on and helping them realize that this is not a class where it's going to be very clearly outlined, you know, here's your soup, eat it, you know what I mean? And I think that, I really love that, and I love the narrative that you were just so seamlessly creating. Well, and it's not really, I think, finding its pacing. I thought episodes 9 and 10 were brilliant. And you're really starting to find your pace and your sense of self in that. And the students are listening and responding. It makes a difference.
That's right, Jim. And when I taught the course, it was more of a mess than this is now. The students have this expectation to know from day one what is all the work that I need to do. Like, we've got a couple, I think you can sense them on the blogs, who are doing everything that's asked of them, and that's the way university education works. And this has that to a certain extent, but then again, you know, we don't know who our groups are for this audio play, so you're putting people into an uncomfortable zone. And part of that's by design, and part of that is just your general workflow style. So I think I've tried to share that in a sense, and hopefully it's settled some nerves.
Well, yeah. No, you have. I mean, I think it's been awesome working alongside you, and I like that. You know, you joke about me not being organized, but I think you're having some fun with it, so that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
Jim, does anyone truly know?
You sound like Gladys from Portal. You sound like Gladys from Portal. Like, you're about to sing me happy birthday. It's like, you cannot escape this game.
Ooh, nice.
I'm sorry for my bad Gladys interpretation. That was a brilliant.
That statement got frozen at my end, Barbara. Could you repeat it, please?
Well, it's probably the bad wireless in my house that's doing this. The question was whether anyone truly knows what is going on in DS-106. Isn't part of the beauty that the community can direct a lot of it and things can happen organically through some of the creativity that happens?
I believe so. I mean, I believe when I kind of step back from dictating the terms, and it's my inclination to dictate the terms, you know, I want to, but by stepping back a little bit and also trying to warn students what they're getting in from, because I don't want students to come in and not have any idea. I want them to have some warning that it's going to be chaotic,
right?
And they don't believe me even when I warn them. But if I give them that, and the community takes over, like Brian Bennett's taking over, as we see here between doing tile in his house. But the idea here is, you know, how do I let Scott Lowe just do his thing without saying, do I have to meet some expectation that Jim Groom has? Or Charlie, I have to do this particular assignment to make Jim Groom happy. Or Kara to say, I have to do this assignment to make the professor happy. I love it when Kara, like, what really gets me excited is Kara saying, I can't believe these two nurses are smoking in the nursing station yeah. in Eye of the Beholder. Like, that's the kind of shit I like. I like people to be who they are and share who they are online while being creative as a community. And I can't get that if I try and write up a very detailed rubric about what I need and who I am or what I expect in that way. I think there has to be some expectations. So that's a balancing act that I'm still trying to figure out. I don't pretend to have fully figured out. And with that, given I haven't had anything figured out, I'd like to welcome Science Bennett. Welcome. Yeah, you don't need audio. You just need to look beautiful. And
how are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Did you see that that assignment that Brian Short did of you and Ben?
Yes.
I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, and Ben and I, we thought we might need to start scheming a little bit to come back with something. So
I think you do. That's
awesome.
We'll
see what happens.
I'm a big fan. So, and the Open Online students, I mean, we're going to get to the audio stuff, and I'm not going to try and drag this on too long. Mm-hmm. But I just have to give a big shout out to the Open Online students, and I hope that the UMW students realize this to a degree. You got to realize that there are people there in the Open Online who are skilled, who are learning alongside you, and who are resources. What's more, they are inspiring the UMW students, and I see it happening. Just like Brian Short, who did the shame, I mean, not Brian Short, but Brian Smith, who's fumbling around right now. He did that amazing revolutionary Che poster that I think has got other things going and driving. I just love the way that happens. I mean, the play between the Open Online participants and the UMW students is awesome. And I'm hoping that the UMW students like Charlie, Kara, and many others start engaging that, because that's the gold of the class. It really is. So, speaking of gold, Scott Lowe, we have something to prepare now. We have something to talk about. And what we're going to have to talk about is we're going to have to square up a little bit what week 3 is going to look like, because we're expecting a kind of Herculean task from the people who are playing along, whether they be online participants and UMW students for sure. We're expecting you to work in groups of 3 or 4 and to create a half-hour long radio show based in some part on the work you're doing right now, Scott Lowe, with getting people to listen to dynamic, awesome, old-school radio like Arch Obler, the Neanderthal, for example. So I want to hear your thoughts about it, Scott Lowe, and then I'll fill in my thoughts, and then anyone else who's interested can jump in and give us some of your thoughts, because I'm going to, base on what we talk about here, I'm going to send out marching orders to people, the UMW students who have to do it, and then any online open participants who want to volunteer to go through with this 9 or 10 days of madness.
That's right, Jim, and that's, I suppose, precisely why I'm here. So I would maybe amend it a little bit. You know, I'm personally into the Arch Obler, but that's only because Grant Potter tweeted a link that Brian Alexander had tweeted, and I had never known of Arch Obler 8 weeks ago. So as I was playing with this idea of the radio school, I just thought this would be the nice first project to look at. But I have a greater interest in old-time radio in general, particularly old variety shows like Jack Benny or Fred Allen. Now, I don't want to dictate to a student what they should do. So as you were making your comment, you said a radio show. And I think that might be a more free guideline that lets the students define what they make, because perhaps they don't want to make a mystery show. Does that?
They don't have a choice.
Well, there you go.
Charlie and Kara, I want your feedback, as well as Brian and here's the thing. yes, they do have a choice. But once I say, you know, freedom is all the land and you can run around and eat, you know, with your Birkenstocks and eat all the whatever you have, that all that wheat stuff, wheat grass juice, that's all fine and good if you're in California. But the point is here, we have a short part of time, and there's got to be, like with the Twilight Zone episodes, there's got to be some sort of lens or kind of approach. Brian's having a hard time. Or some sort of approach to keep them focused. Like we're using, I really like how the Twilight Zone episodes that I'm asking people to watch have helped focus the assignments and get people in. And that's not something I planned, but it's working. I wonder if we don't try for the audio show to make it actually a little bit less of a burden for the groups, to try and make it a Twilight Zone-like episode for a half hour, which is a lot to ask. But at least it focuses it so they don't spend 3 days saying, what the hell are we going to do? What do you think, Scott?
Well, I think you're right, Jim. I think that choosing what to do is the hardest thing, especially when you're with a new group of people that you've never met before. You don't have any face-to-face time together. So that would be one reason to put a certain, what is hook the right word, some way to...
Yeah,
shape the assignment.
And
but
if
then,
they're...
But then again, I'm thinking, as you're talking, you know, the way I might go about it would maybe try to do a Siskel and Ebert type review of several episodes. And what if two or three students wanted to do that, where they're talking about it as well as pulling in excerpts or what we call actualities in the business? That's some involved, sophisticated production. And to make something that is listenable, compelling for 20 or 30 minutes, that's a hard thing to do. So if they can do that, I would accept that if I was the teacher.
I would too. I'm not saying I wouldn't. And you can have a Twilight Zone-like show that mixes and matches media. There's no two ways about that. And you could kind of, you know, play with the theme, so to speak. So what we did last summer, or 2 summers ago, when we did The Summer of Oblivion, which was Dr. Oblivion, is the theme was summer camp, right? It was kind of like, you know, we had a series of themes we chose from, and we had a series of themes, and the final one was summer camp. So I wonder if we don't frame it around a Twilight Zone-like theme, right? And that kind of gives us some, we've seen like 3 or 4 episodes now, so it gives us some framework to work within. And if a group is adamant that they want to do a hard-boiled radio show, or they want to do a kind of mix and match, the thing I don't want that often happens is people are like, I want to do a summer radio show. And what they do is they play their favorite summer songs. It's not really a compelling radio show. I mean, yeah, I understand the idea of summer songs, but then, you know, it can easily go to the point of, I'm going to play my favorite songs, or I'm going to put my favorite song on this track and people will like it. Well, maybe if they like, if they have your taste in music. What I do want them to think, and what you've been preparing them for, is create some sort of dramatic arc to that half-hour radio show. And it is difficult, and they may fail. And I have no problem if they fail at it, as long as they've tried to work together in a group and documented their process to bring, you know, something together by the end of next week.
You should pull in... Orson Welles in The War of the Worlds and talk about what made that compelling.
Yeah, I think that's a really good
that
idea.
That was science fiction before Twilight Zone started in a live way. And actually, Radiolab, they did a really, really good hour-long episode on The War of the Worlds in history. And so they talked about the original broadcast, and it happened again in Ecuador.
That's
and then
right.
it happened in the 60s in Buffalo, you know?
Yeah, and they had some pretty crazy stuff happen in Ecuador, right? Like that.
Yeah, they burned the radio station down. Like 9 people died. You know, there were riots. The army went out. It was nuts.
That's right.
But, you know, it's compelling radio. It's about, you know, putting the story together. So.
I think that's a really good point, Brian. And one of the things we had, and Grant Potter often reflects back on this, and so do I. Martha Burtis was teaching this class the spring of 2011, and we had a group of 4 students come together. They were UMW students, some of UMW's finest, and I love the UMW crew. So shout out to Cara, Amy, if you're still there, and to, no, she's back, she's out, and to Charlie. That's just giving you your special shout out. But the idea is that they had a group of students who found themselves in a radio station during the zombie apocalypse. And it was brilliant because they set up a brilliant premise that they were like, is anybody out there? Is anybody out there? And they were talking and fighting with each other, and each played a role. And the idea was basically like the world was gone and they were waiting for the zombies to come. And the drama played out as if it was a radio station. So they would play commercials that no longer had any meaning. They would kind of bring in the media that Scott Lowe was mentioning, but they still used a narrative frame to make it compelling. And it was amazing how compelling it was and how little they had to kind of act out and speak out every bit of drama. They could use special effects and sound effects to really make it compelling. So I like the idea of asking the students to think about what makes Twilight Zone episodes compelling, what works with them, and how might you think about making that work in a half hour radio show. Now, if it becomes a 20-minute radio show or even a little longer, you know, I think we can work with that idea. I'm not going to be like a religious fanatic about a timeline, but I am going to be very specific about the idea that it has to be a narrative and not a collage of your favorite shows. Because when that happens and people say, oh, I'm going to do an interview show or I'm going to sit down with people, it usually goes south because they wait till the last minute, they do no production, and it's a lot of crap. How do you feel about that, Scala?
Well, that's right, Jim. That's what sort of compelled me or drove me to come up with this still as yet not fully formed idea of an approach or a way, in having taught radio classes not very well and seeing what students come up with when told to make a radio show. Oftentimes there will be a 20-minute interview that is completely excruciating to listen to because they just have the microphone and he or she talked to an interesting person but didn't get anything out of it. There's no build-up or setup. And my thinking on that was that the kids today, the young people today, they just have no sense of what's been done in the past, the established sort of forms and structures of radio, narrative, interview, game show, whatever it is. So we want to dig in and listen, but for me, the idea of getting it in 1 week is just problematic because I have an expectation for something that I can never quite reach. So, but I hear what you're saying, that it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be perfect. It needs to be done, and it needs to try to draw upon Serling or Obler or Orson Welles, a great storyteller. And I think that's a very good target. And I don't know if I'm answering your question, but these are the thoughts that are sparking around.
You agree entirely, and I would be dishonest if I, or I would be, how would you say it? Not dishonest necessarily, or lying, whatever you would say. I'm clearly taking my cues from you. The stuff you've done with Obler, the way in which he creates a story in a very short period of time with not a lot of kind of verbose verbiage about stuff, and the way he uses those special effects, or what Boslin talked about with the kind of turning someone inside out and what might sound like, and that creating an atmosphere of horror. Students, in a short period of time, can do that. One of the things they have to think about when they're creating the story together as a group is, what are they going to do that's manageable? And part of making a successful show is making something that's manageable, that's not a lot of overhead, like a zombie apocalypse from a radio station. It's a really smart premise. And I want them to think as a group about what premise is going to work. And, you know, I think you'll be surprised, Scott Lowe, they won't all be great. And we understand that, but it'll all spend a lot of time working really hard. But the thing that I think we'll realize really quick is how quickly this can become something better than what if we just let them roll entirely with their own thing. So we'll see how that goes.
I hear you. How about any of the people in the Hangout? Any thoughts or reactions to what's going on here? I notice in the text chat that Kara seems to agree with you, Jim, that it would be easier for her to at least have the formula or the framework starting out. Charlie as well would like to have a starting point. So I think you know what you're doing, Jim. You've done this and you have it clearly in your mind. And
well, like
if
I
you're,
said,
if you're taking you know, your if you're taking your guidance from me, I think this ship might hit the rocks. So
well, I hope it does. And I actually think, in some ways, that the Obler stuff, what me and you might want to talk about, and what we might want to think about over the next few days, because I think the design stuff is kind of finishing up, and we're really starting to focus on audio. People like Cara and Charlie are going to have questions about audio specifically. And what we might want to do in the low cast, and what we might want to do just, and I'll work on this with my audio assignments, is focus on how, A, we deal with stuff like ambiance. What are some good premises? I think Brian's point about, you know, War of the Worlds, maybe me putting up that zombie cast station so that people can listen to what was successful in the past would be a really good guide for the students now. So I think what we need to focus on in the next 3 or 4 days is I'll put together groups. I'll ask the open online students to create their own groups. I'm not going to put them in groups. They can decide how they want to do that. And then what we'll do from there is we'll try and have, okay, by Monday we hit a certain point of kind of getting them up and running on audio. And then next week, we really give them a wide open week, but we need progress reports every day, and we'll report them out on the Scott Lowcast or something else. And, you know, maybe we'll just basically start, we're going to be on top of the work they do, and we want to know that this isn't going to wait till Saturday. Because another surefire way it's going to fail is that if the group kind of, you know, on Monday starts to say, oh, you know, I might want to talk about rainbows. And then by Thursday, they're like, what are we going to do? We want to know Monday what you're going to do. And then we want an update every day with a sample of audio that's showing us where you are by Friday. And then Saturday and Sunday, it's going to be probably hit time. And then we'll have a show on Sunday.
Now, how is this going to be communicated? This will be in your blog post?
Yeah, this will be in my blog post. And I'll share it with you.
Okay.
So you'll see it.
So I can preview.
So that's my
idea. Lowdown.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Does that work?
That sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. And week three is going
to
be.
Barbara has just said something in the chat, which I try to think about all the time, and she's quoting another Barbara from Barbara Ganley, that one really needs to think about the audience in doing anything, and why do they want to listen, and of course, putting that first-person pronoun is one way to tune people out. Got to put the you in there instead of the me and the I, and
Really,
why are they listening, and how are you going to keep them listening?
You know, thanks, what we Barbara. Can do, yeah, I think she's right, and the idea of unicorns and narwhals is also a good point too. I never thought of narwhals in that whole equation, but that's a big one. The other thing that we can do, and maybe we should poll people, we need to get a good sense of what Twilight Zone episodes in terms of conceptual, like what are good, tight concepts that Serling or Matheson or other people put together that might help people think about some sort of narrative devices. So this week I'm going to probably give more, I'll probably give 3 or 4 Twilight Zone episodes with the idea that people listen to them to get ideas of devices as they're coming up with their narrative. So this week is going to seem a little bit easier because it's going to be a number of Twilight Zone episodes and you work on a radio show. But the working on the radio show is going to be hard. I'd like you and me, Scott Lowe, to be part of the scripting process. So when students are working on scripting, we're on that Google Doc so we can see what they're doing.
Okay.
We can give them advice there. And then we're also going to be in the effects. We want to see what effects they are. We want to see where they're getting their effects. And we want a sample of their work. And they can decide which group member is going to do that. But we want a sample of their work every day. There's also going to be another 15 stars of audio assignments that they're going to have to work through so that we know individually each person is working on the audio. Because one of the things that could happen is that students could say, okay, you know audio, so you'll produce this. Here's our ideas. I still want every student to be a part of the audio production process.
I don't know, Jim. All That's I can say is I picked a hell of a week to quit huffing glue. We got a lot of work to do. What about these daily updates? You want them to post actual audio snippets on their blogs? Is that what you're thinking?
Or I would.
The Google document?
Yeah.
Both.
I would.
Okay.
I love how Charlie is doubled up right now. That's awesome. I do. I want students, you know, and I want students to brainstorm openly. Like, this is what my group was talking about. And here's what I want to share about what I think would be good, and have their group comment. I want to see the group collaborating and working together in the open. And I don't want that to be here some secret black box we've been working in for a week, and here's our great project. No, like everything else with the class, I want the process of your thinking individually and as a group to be demonstrated. And if someone's not helping out, call them out. If someone's not doing their shit, I want to know.
Well, you know, Jim, let me interrupt you for a second. I'm sorry. Because what makes...
Maybe we should show last night on Maple Street where they call each other out. It's like a big communist conspiracy.
That's when the power's out. Anyway. The power's out and
that's
there's
right.
aliens down the road. Oh, God. I love that one.
Yeah, the visitors on Maple Street, I think it's what I forget.
But what you were just saying brings me back to a question that was asked to you today at your talk in New Hampshire, and you've been asked before about assessment. And I think Barbara was in the chat there. It might have been a different Barbara, but I don't think it was. Again, echoing it on assessment, that if they keep it behind the black box, and even if whatever they make, if it's a hit, a home run, or a failure, that's all you have to assess in making the grade. But doing this public narration, commenting, that's how you can see who's doing what and give them what everybody's in it for ultimately is the grade. So if we can communicate that in some way to the students, then that might ease their minds a bit, that it's not about getting an Academy Award or the radio equivalent of an Academy Award. It's about working together, figuring out an idea quickly, and it might not be the best idea, but it's what you got, you all agree upon, then do the work. And so long as we can see the work, and not just we, but the whole open web can see the work, that's, I think, what you're looking for, Jim, isn't it?
It is. It's absolutely right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are they in
the rubric? The rubric will be posted once the class is over. We'll know what we were looking for. So, I mean, does this at all clarify things for you, Scotland?
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Now, let me ask the students, Cara, Charlie, and I would ask Amy, but she's no longer in here. Does this clarify for you guys, before I send out an email, what about some feedback about this as a model for your next week? I'm sure you're not looking forward to it because it's a ton of work. But besides that, what about the specifics? Anything we can do to clarify and make your life easier besides doing work?
As far as the individual stuff goes, how is that going to work? Can you just like upload it to SoundCloud, little tidbits, or...
Absolutely.
Just up to how we do the works.
And like you're doing everything else, contextualize it, link to the resources you got the audio from or how you created it, and link to how it's reinforcing the larger project that your group's working on. Okay. And comment on other people's stuff who are doing something similar. Make sense?
Yes.
Awesome. So they
might even want to make a SoundCloud for the group. Maybe. I don't know. That might be too complicated. Maybe just each individual do their stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this, and this is interesting. So what I've seen groups do, and what I've seen work as a workflow, groups start out in a Google Doc. They share it with me and with you, Scott Lowe, and we can give them feedback. But they're doing that, and then they write about their process on their blog. Once they have an idea of where they're going in a script, then they can start experimenting with sound effects and ideas specifically, and that will be a riffing process. So part of the early blogging is riffing around the idea, is talking about what's possible, and they're doing that on their blog. And there's going to be a few days, probably as we hit midweek or even go into the end of the week, where you guys are going to be hunkering down and working on larger tracks in a audio, like someone's going to get all the samples on their Audacity, or a couple of people are going to be working on. I've seen students break it up into sections. I'm working on the first 5 minutes. You're working on the second 5 minutes. And they're going to be figuring out how to make it consistent over the whole 30 minutes. So there's going to be things you're going to have to figure out the workflow on as a group and what works. As you see with anything with DS-106, the sooner you start it and pay attention to it, the better it will be. It's basically a rule of, it's like Moore's rule of the universe. Or Newton, or someone physical.
I found that out the hard way, week one.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I like that. I mean, as long as you're doing it, and you were doing it, and you were reflecting on what you were doing, that makes a difference. It really does, and it keeps you in the game, which I like. You know, there's no like, oh, this was, like Scott Lowe was saying, oh, this is going to be the beautiful project that comes out of nothing anyone's seen. No, I mean, being seen and going through the process is the point. You know, how good it is depends upon a lot of other factors that are sometimes out of your control. So, and I understand that.
Are you going to do a radio show, Jim, a radio play?
I think I'm thinking about working with you and anyone else who wants to work.
Are you now?
And I am. I mean, I don't know. We might be too embedded, but I would like to do a radio show because I think I have to eat my own dog food. If the students are going to actually take me seriously at the end of the day, and if I ask them to do stuff like this, I think I have to be able to step up too. So, yeah, I'm planning on it. I did one for the Summer of Oblivion. It was fun as hell.
I want to do a game show, Jim, kind of like remember You Bet Your Life?
I do.
That was on radio before it was on TV. So you can be Groucho, and I'll be George Fenneman, and we'll bring in contestants over the Skype, and what will make it good is your banter with the contestants, and I can just be, you know, announcing the point total.
I love it.
Couple number one had $75.
See, and the thing is what I like about it is it's simple. And we could do it.
Well, we can think about it. Better yet, you be Jack Benny and I'll be Rochester.
Yeah, but that takes talent.
there's the rub.
All right. So unless anybody has any other questions.
Let me just jump in. Grant Potter is listening in and he posted the listener map. We've got one in Nova Scotia, one in NY City, probably the Cog Dog. Looks like one on the outskirts of Chi-Town. A little bit north and west of Chi-Town. That'd be Dr. Garcia.
That would be the great doctor.
And Vancouver. Maybe the good Dr. Jones.
DJ Dr. Jones. Yep. Who I called out once. I called him out once jokingly. And then he never responded to any of my tweets. I wonder if he's... and Dr. Jones, I've always been a fan. Dr. Jones, if you're listening, don't judge me. Jim Groom does not judge you. Okay, Kara, you have a question.
Yeah,
can we add pretty much anything to our blogs? Because I'm strongly considering adding a page for tornado videos because they're cool and I like them. Kara, this is absolutely your site. You can add anything you want. And if you want to go down the kind of not safe for work, that's fine. Just let people know it's not safe for work. This is your space. You do whatever you want. You want to create, you want to blog stuff that's not related to DS-106? No problem. I can just pull a tag on your blog that only pulls in stuff you tag DS-106 or a category. So this is truly your space, and you do what you want. So yes, if you're into tornado videos, you can also pull that into your assignments, right? You can make, you know, a little like Wizard of Oz radio play. We're not at home, Toto. Toto, the house is flying. I'm actually reading Wizard of Oz to my kids right now. That's awesome.
That's a good Dorothy voice. Right. I don't know if you want to talk about this now, Jim, and if not, please say so.
Don't judge me, Scott.
It came up towards the end, I think, in the question and answers today in New Hampshire, that occasionally when people are expressing themselves and for the first time perhaps having a public forum on a blog or an audio or video, that some things might come out that are perhaps potentially offensive. I'm talking about good taste, bad taste, but there is a line, and what might appear to be funny at the moment may not be. You mentioned the case of an audio thing that never got released, but was, when you listened to it in class, it was very much something we can't play. Yeah. This is dangerous. And is that something we talk about now or later?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. So. Okay. What is Scott Lowe referring to? I once had in a class, I taught this in face-to-face class. I had students who set up, and this was I used to do these quick audio assignments. So you had to create an audio story in like 15 minutes. So they had a baby crying next on top of a track of two people having sex, which sounded, as you can imagine, like a baby being raped. Well, that's not what you want. Because audio is visceral, and when they did that, the class had a visceral reaction, and they were really upset. And they really didn't. I believe that that wasn't their intention. The idea was that that baby crying because two parents are in another room having sex, which you can imagine. It's not unimaginable as a concept, but edited the wrong way, it's a completely horrific idea. And I think that happens. But I think that's why, A, you're working in a group. B, you're thinking and listening, not with only your idea, but like Barbara said, with the idea of why other people will listen and what other people might hear. And I think, you know, obviously we're working within a community, so there is some protection in regards to that. I think people, if they hear something that you really couldn't hear because you were so blinded by your idea, they'll help you. And if they hear something that they seems crazy, you'll know soon. But that potentially happens. And I don't teach to fear. That's never been my approach, and I'm not overly concerned about it. I think when it happens, we figure out why it happened, how it happened, and fix it. But that's always a potential, Scott Lowe. And I think, you know, I've also heard radio shows that were kind of offensive, and I think they didn't think. For example, there was a radio show which is like about a bunch of guys about how they – it was kind of a sexist radio show, like how the chicks love them. Like that was the basic concept of the show, and it was not very compelling. You know, it wasn't good radio, and it wasn't interesting because, you know, they think it was funny in their circle. But like Barbara was saying, once you get out of that circle and you have these in jokes and you're saying they were jokes, but you couldn't contextualize the jokes, you couldn't make them meaningful for a larger community and audience. You know, sitcoms do stupid things like that all the time, right? I mean, there's no shortage of that in our culture. But I would hope that you would think as you come to this group that there's something beyond you that you want to communicate. And that's why I love the Twilight Zones. I do think in some ways they're the best of television and pop culture because they were always trying to communicate about the human condition in some ways. And not that I'm asking you now go out and communicate about the human condition, and that's no small task to take on, but I think you can. And part of that is thinking about narrative beyond your kind of, you know, 3 inches of perspective.
Jim, I think you make a real good point there that once something's produced and it goes public, it goes beyond just your little circle, that all of a sudden you as a producer see that differently. And that might be an eye-opener for a lot of the students.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Bill, we've had a lot of great stuff. So it's ridiculous for me to sit here and talk about a couple of things that maybe weren't all that successful. Because a large percentage of the stuff is successful. That said, Scott Lowe's point is well taken. To do audio well in a week and a half, like Kara's saying, it's straightforward, but what you do need, you need to put in some serious hours because it is going to kill you. And I love that idea because I want to see you suffer. I mean, there's a part of me that's an absolute sadist. But at the same time, I feel for you right now. I'm crying on the inside because I'm so sad for you and the work you have to do.
Why are you crying, Jim?
I'm looking at you, Charlie.
Oh, you're crying for the students.
That's right. Pandering again, damn it.
With a big grin on your face. I think what Bill just mentioned echoes what Barbara said before and again in the text chat, and her microphone's out. So let me read this verbatim because it's very useful. It's not a question, it's a statement. It is a really important lesson for everyone to learn and be reminded of the fact that your intention is not always your listener's perception, which is a very good echo summary of what we've been talking about. And I think what Bill said, that's beautiful what you said, Bill, that it can be an eye-opening experience, and that's a very valuable lesson. So that's one of the...
I think that was a point that was made in Jim's earlier presentation on the chat about intention versus perception.
Yep.
And that is a big thing. I experienced that, you know, as a teacher. You know, I intend to say something that's understandable and meaningful, but it doesn't always come across that way. And that's where there needs to be that two-way, hey, can I ask you a question? Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and there also needs why that those tidbits, like just think about it, as you're working as a group and working it through, releasing clips of what we might hear, some of the ideas, helps you get that, you know, creative feedback you need to work vitally. Because the idea when we put it on DS-106 radio is that the class will hear it for the first time in some ways, but also that it's a wider work now. And it's not a work that I'm going to look, listen to, and be done with. It's a work that's going to premiere live on a radio station that you need to think about what that means. You need to think of framing about it accordingly. And you need to have a larger idea that, you know, the intentionality, like you're referring to, and the idea that people listen to beyond the 5 people or the 10 people in your group or whatever is or the other is important. But it's important because it's important for storytelling. It's important for narrating our work, the idea that possibly someone else can a lesson about the design assignment you created or your thing. You give people context. You give them a sense of who you are and how you're thinking. But in the narrative, it's the same thing. You give people a context of a story, hopefully, that's bigger than you. And that's why this is very important that we work in groups and that you kind of put away your kind of, you know, somewhat, I would say, provincial ideas or what you think is funny or what you think is interesting, but don't divorce yourself from it. But base it on maybe a larger concept or narrative arc, like we're seeing, hopefully, in some of those best Twilight Zone episodes. That's all I'll say. I know you can't believe it.
I think that's a good wrapping point. Well done, Jim. Yes. Anybody else in the Hangout want to chime in before we go off the radio? All right, then. So I will now sign off of DS-106 Radio. Of course, the Hangout will remain open for a few more minutes, and this will be recorded and available somewhere in the near future. Thank you for listening, DS-106 Radio. Bye-bye. Okay, we're off the air.
Oh, that's awesome.